and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated, Fukushima irradiated, eyeball vaccinated, island chained nation of New Zealand. Gosh dang, this place is absolutely beautiful. And you know what's the most beautiful thing about New Zealand is that the Green Party, the big environmental activists that they are, one of their main ways to save our native birds and stuff like that, that have been killed all over the place, allegedly by pests and what have you, is to dump one of the world's most toxic, dangerous, endocrine disrupting in the parts per trillion in the human reproductive system poison all over pristine bushland in water catchment areas, right into the rivers and everything like that. And apparently that's going to be good for the environment. Oh, the scumbaggery. And today, speaking of scumbaggery, we like to have people on that expose scumbaggery, people of like mind who are cool, and actually in quite rare occasions we have people who are young, like myself. I'm young, and you know, people who are young in the truth movement are, well, basically, I think that society has split us apart from our elders to a large degree, and the people who become most effective earlier on in life, people like myself and my guest and what have you, generally gain a lot of experience from our elders, and that's why we become so damn awesome at what it is we do so early on in the piece. So Ryan Dawson is my guest. Ryan, welcome to the program. And I was wondering if you could actually substantiate that kind of thing. I mean, have you been hanging out with a whole bunch of older dudes and learning the knowledge and what have you, or has it just been a journey solo?
I don't know, it's case by case, I guess. There's another gentleman out here in Japan with me, James Corbett. He's a young fellow from Canada, another expatriate. But I guess my mentor sort of is Mike Rivero. He's been giving me all the exposure on whatreallyhappened.com. Always puts my videos up and my writing, and I'd been doing so. Actually, people have been doing that with my work before I was aware of it. Just pasting out, like, where is all this traffic coming from periodically? I finally figured out where it was, and that's now I am the substitute host for his show, and so he's certainly helped me a lot. But there's a lot of other elders who I don't consider in the truth movement. I call it the kook movement. I've probably done that myself, separating from them, because I don't buy into the energy weapons and no planes and all that baloney. I think that's poisoning the well.
All right, well, let's start off then and just give people, for those of you in the audience who don't know, just a little bit about who you are and what it is you actually do.
Well, I don't define myself by my job, but I teach economics in Japan. I am the goodwill ambassador for NARA. I am expatriate from America, graduate from William & Mary. I have degrees in history and philosophy, and I'm an author and written books. But I'm probably in the truth movement most famous for the films I've made about 9/11, about the Iraq War, one on the Holocaust. and I run a website with anti-neocons and substitute hosts on whatreallyhappened.com show, and have been on GCN, RBN, Oracle, anti-war radio, all of that. But I guess I'm most famous for my writings, and on 9/11, I made a big 3-hour and 40-minute film called War by Deception in 2008, and I made one in 2004 called All Roads Lead to Israel. And that's pretty much, I think that's what really got the ball rolling. But it all started off as I made a website for Native American issues, and then it became an anti-war site in general as the build-up to the Iraq War was coming and the build-up to the Afghanistan War was coming. And I've exposed the anthrax case, the Litvinenko case, the Libby trial. I'm always on the ball there right now. I made a video about Syria explaining what was really going on, Yemen, what's really been going on. I'm getting ready to make one about Myanmar, so people can understand pipelines and the motives and what's really going on in a concrete fashion with real names and documents and the money, instead of this sort of generic path to nowhere, just screaming Illuminati, NWO, blah, 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 doesn't really fix anything. I'm trying to name the people and do the real nose to the grind type of work for folks. So the people who like me like the concrete stuff. The people who don't like me are the ones I bash on all the time because I call them kooks.
Okay, so is name calling a sign of maturity or scientific prowess?
Neither. It's like it depends if it's hollow or not. Like if you just have an ad hominem attack, that's just kind of childish. But when you destroy someone's, I guess they want to call it an argument, but you destroy someone's hypothesis, which they like to call a theory, and it's not a theory, but you destroy it with facts and evidence, and then you call them a retard to boot, I think that's fine. Because that's just a description. It's not like saying, just calling someone a name for nothing. I mean, when somebody is talking about space aliens morphing into people and stuff, I don't know what else to say other than, are you retarded? I mean, there's nothing there to debunk. It's dismissive, it's true. But I'm not sure.
Come to the point where I don't exactly know 100% what's true and what's not anymore. Like 100% either A, I wasn't there, or B, whatever. But there's certain logic that you could put into it, and it's more to the point. Even if shape-shifting reptilian aliens and no planes and everything like that, and blah 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 blah, unsubstantiated claim here. It doesn't actually faze me. Like I'm not worried if people are saying that kind of thing. I'm always thinking about, well, there's possibilities and then there's absolute realities. And as far as I'm concerned, somebody could say anything, and anything's technically a possibility, very remote. But there's no way I would ever base my life around something that I don't know is 100% concrete. And if somebody wants to say something that's way out of left field or something like that, I'll go, okay. I'm not going to, I'll listen to it and accept it, but I'm not going to base my life around it or believe it.
Right. Well, I think the reason I care what these kooks say is it's well poisoning. The reason we have such a stigma about the whole category of conspiracies, that whole topic, is because of all the fringe ones that are out there about JFK, about 9/11, about whatever. You got these guys, and it's usually the same people over and over making up things, saying, oh, the Shaputer film was fake, or it's all holograms and stuff on, there aren't any planes, like Fetzer, these people. That's poisoning the well. And so when I go to talk about 9/11, they go, oh, one of these people, and I have to have like a disclaimer to say, no, all of that is trash. You know, let's talk about real things here. And I usually start with the Iran-Contra affair because they haven't torn that one apart yet. And Iran-Contra was a government conspiracy. You're talking about multiple countries working together in secret, killed over 20,000 people, running drugs and weapons in through Nicaragua and using Iran and Israel again. And the cover-up there, the two chief investigators.
I didn't know that they killed 20,000 people.
Oh, yeah, the 20,000 people minimal. And, I mean, it's not hidden. Like, you can go research the stats on everything, but Iran-Contra was just sort of, like, painted as, oh, they were helping the Contras kill the Sandinistas with money that they made through illegal weapon sales in Iran, and the Israel part has been removed, usually, which is common.
I was going to say, as it does.
Yeah. Well, that would... Oh, it's always. I mean, they openly ethnically cleanse their neighbors right now, and you can't even get that on TV. And it's not hideable. You know, it's like they are bulldozing down houses. They have rules and laws like Jews and Palestinians can't be married, can't go to the same high schools. They have segregated roads, and right now, and that's it's still like, covered.
It's like a Nazi Germany run by Jews. It's classic.
Yeah, that's the ironic thing, you know, by these Zionist Jewish supremacists, you know, and it makes Jews in general look bad, the whole diaspora, all of them, because it's like, look what the Jews are doing, is what people say all the time. We're like, oh, man. I mean, I don't like that because, like, as an American, look what my government is doing, you know, all over the place.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it ain't Americans, it's my government, which is... Yeah.
Just like it's not Jews,
it's run by the same corporate oligarchy as, you know, the UK's government and many other governments. You know, the same.
We're talking about the evilarchy, right? It's a crux between evil oligarchy and malarkey, and it's basically like that.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, it's a plutocracy, to be short, is the old Greek word for it. I think it's the best description for it.
I don't know. There was a great one, a kleptocracy. It's a cross between a kleptomaniac and a democracy. So everybody agrees to elect the person who's the best compulsive thief.
Democracy is such a tainted word. I mean, it doesn't matter if your government is clearly a dictatorship or a democracy or whatever. All forms of government have the capacity to go out and murder millions of innocent people. I mean, the United States killed 2 million in Vietnam, 1 million Koreans, probably 1 million or more Iraqis. But those aren't Holocaust. Those aren't anything. That's just all collateral damage. We were chasing the bad guys, you know. And it doesn't matter if it's communism or terrorism or whatever the rationalization is. No supposed dictatorship or whatever where we have brought democracy has ever developed into a real democracy. It's just murdering a lot of people, profiting a lot from the military-industrial complex. And that's about it. You get a bunch of dead bodies and lose a lot of money, and nothing good comes from any of it. But Iran-Contra, as I was saying, we had basically Iran-Contra Part 2. The investigators for Iran-Contra were Lee Hamilton, the other leader, the Republican, Dick Cheney. That's who supposedly are investigating Bush's father's ring with their privateers and everything. And it's unbelievable because later again, during the 9/11 Commission, supposed to investigate 9/11, who is the chairman for the 9/11 Commission? Lee Hamilton, again. And then Dick Cheney and Bush get questioned together. But everybody on
In secret.
Right,
off the record.
Doors. Yeah.
Don't you just love that? It's open, it's transparent, everything like that. About half the people testify in secret and nobody ever finds out about it, and they keep building 7 out of the official story altogether. It's just, come on.
I think because that's there's no way to explain that building falling down without anything touching it. But, I mean, Bush tried to block an investigation never even happening. Senator Daschle's one that pushed for it so hard. Somebody sent him some anthrax. Tried to kill him. Patrick Leahy and Daschle were both on committees that could have blocked the Patriot Act, and they needed the Patriot Act to retroactively scrub a lot of the evidence that would have led to the real culprits in 9/11. Like, they couldn't see, they couldn't review or bring into open court the recordings from the airports and such, from the CCTV cameras that always seem to never work whenever the government's doing its own crimes, like in 7/7 or Oklahoma City, on 9/11 too with the Pentagon. They always turn off or get confiscated or classified, of course, you know. So why do we have cameras? You can't even watch them.
Well, yeah, and that's like the Pentagon, for example. What were there, like 50 different security cameras that captured what hit the Pentagon or something of that nature that got confiscated by the FBI? And what do they do? It's like out of 50 whole different tapes and everything like that, they release how many frames?
5 or something.
You're freaking kidding me.
Yeah. I mean, well, they had to go collect all the tapes because there's a secondary explosion in the Pentagon. You can't really show that on tape. It seems like it went off a little premature before the plane hit. So it's like, oops, whoops. But they covered that. They polluted that whole thing by saying first a truck bomb, then a missile, then a Global Hawk, anything except for the plane that hit. Because these kooks, they get a part of the story right. There is no way Hanji Hanjour could have flown the descent of the plane that corkscrew turned and hit and got it right into the first floor with barely touching the parking lot. And right, you know, there's no way a human pilot. I mean, it's possible, but I mean, it's very, very, very slim chance that a professional pilot could have done that.
What are those guys that fly trick stuff for NASA, like the blue angels or whatever it is?
Yeah, I mean, maybe one of those dudes
was hired by Dick Cheney personally to fly that thing into the Pentagon. Guaranteed, mate.
Or it was guided in remotely, and we see all the software and the testing for that, and the flight schools were the same flight schools were during Iran-Contra and where they were smuggling drug money in and things, and for Jeb Bush too, smuggling in drug money, smuggling in some of the diamond monies for the so-called church. I always call it the so-called. I don't consider Robertson really Christian, but I mean, I guess they are, but they're the bad kind. Bunch of charlatan and televangelist types, but you know, they're smuggling drugs and everything else, and we're supposed to believe these guys later. But they had tested all these Boeing planes they acquired with Doug Zosim, the Comptroller in the Pentagon. And the section of the Pentagon that gets hit, of course, happens to be the section that they've renovated where the computers and the people were investigating the $2.3 trillion that is missing. And then the physical SEC gets blown up in New York. Flight 93 didn't even make it to its target. They blew it up anyway. Physically blew up the building. That's Building 7. And then they blew up that section of the Pentagon for a reason.
I mean, it seems like it's such precision strikes, like it's laser targeting or something like that. It's that accurate. I mean, you know, sure. A bunch of people who can't even fly a single engine Cessna is apparently that skilled that he's like a laser targeted bunker buster, and he also has the magical gift of Muslim power to make entire planes disappear with zero evidence that they were ever there. Maybe a few scraps of kind of aluminium cans that may or may not be a discarded Pepsi can from the recent visit to the Pentagon.
Couldn't burn wooden objects inside the hole, though. The fire's hot enough to melt things, but it couldn't burn like chairs and things like that were in. That's amazing.
All right, well,
I hear the music,
when you try to cover something up, ladies and gentlemen, whatever lie you tell, it's not going to make sense to anybody who's got a brain. We'll be right back after the break.
Living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Kino Ranga, Tina Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you ever stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to our planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery. They print a handy buck and loan it to you. They charge interest on the loan but don't print the interest. So there'll never be enough money to pay off all the debt. What do you get? Crash and burn. When will my people learn?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about crashing and burning like a laser targeted drone. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Now, my guest Ryan Dawson has been having some connectivity issues, so we'll come back to him when he comes through. And there was something we wanted to talk about on 9/11, and as with pretty much every conspiracy, there is patsies.
For gremlins?
yeah. Well, I was just having gremlins with my call recorder as well that I just updated today. It's like, you know what? We, as conspiracy theorists, you know, I actually wear that label proudly, kind of thing, because it means that I'm opposed to being a coincidence theorist who think that everything in the entire world, in global politics and terrorism and everything to do with aspartame and fluoride and everything's just a total accident and there's only stupidity to blame, as opposed to absolute total criminality and deliberate scumbaggery.
The government wouldn't lie, would they?
Well, and it's so funny. It's like saying water isn't wet.
Well, I mean, it's like when someone gives me that beef about conspiracy, you just have to sit them down and say, look, any operation that any intelligence agency has ever done, whether it's the CIA or the Mossad or whoever, any time that's ever been done, that is a conspiracy. It's a bunch of guys doing something otherwise illegal in secret, getting it financed by a government, and no one knows about it in line. I mean, that's a conspiracy. I mean, that's every time they have a covert operation. You think a bunch of people can't secretly go do something illegal? Isn't that what they're paid to do?
Well, you see, isn't that the other point to it?
They just call it covert operation. It's okay to say that. You say conspiracy, then it's like sounds goofy.
Yeah, and how did they put that meaning onto conspiracy? I mean, like, did the word conspiracy mean something reasonable and something definite and something perfectly well backed up way back in the day?
It's a legal term. I mean, Poindexter got convicted of conspiracy from Marie-Antoinette. It was a legal term. Like, conspiracy is an act that is illegal, like the mafia and things like that. where you have co-conspirators and doing, you know, doing a covert operation. But the thing is, it's only legal when government does it, of course. When government does it, it's a covert operation. When anyone else does it, it's conspiracy. But it didn't always sound retarded to say, what, you mean people will organize and commit criminal acts together? I mean, obviously, the people are going to do that. Not every crime is done solo, you know. But it started getting a stigma, I guess, after JFK, really. They're like conspiracy theory. They made it sound goofy, getting up, oh, there's conspiracy is impossible. Someone would always come out and tell who? What, and say what? To who? The press? Right. And even if you say it, even if you prove it, like, look, JFK is on film getting shot twice from the front, on film right in front of you. Okay, there's at least a second shooter minimal, or one in the front and none in the back. But obviously the official story is bunk. I mean, the official investigation, the Senate Committee on Assassinations got, and their conclusion was there was a conspiracy and there was more than one shooter. From our own government admits that. And still people think, oh no, Oswald did it all by himself, blah, blah, blah. But that's because people came out and said all this crazy stuff, saying Jackie was in on it and all that. The Fetzers of the world got in there with all their poo-poo flinging and made the whole topic just sound like tinfoil hat stuff. And they throw out all the, it's COINTELPRO, they throw out all this disinformation and they make it as crazy as possible. You know, like missile, that's not that bad. Energy weapons from space, that's fucking stupid. Aliens, that's just beyond, you know, retarded there. But they just have gradations of dumb. And these people are very loud and they all promote each other. Tarpley's got on his book, he's got the missile guys and the node plane guys writing his foreword written on the back and stuff. They all support each other. And these are the people, Fetzer and company like that, they get interviewed on CNN. They get that. They'll give you the dumbed down stuff on TV and act like that's the face of the 9/11 truth movement. But that isn't the face of the 9/11 truth movement. That's the 9/11 kook movement. But the same people wrote the books about JFK and stuff. And again, it was the most retarded things ever. And because of all that, people go, oh, wow, do you believe in aliens and UFO abductions and rape you in the butt and all that? And even that, I mean, even the belief in aliens on its own is not dumb. It's actually rather reasonable to think, oh, you know, we're not alone given this, you know, probability, da da da. But the very specific humanoid type things that are on unsolved mysteries with big eyes and blah, blah, blah. I mean, people are just going to roll their eyes at that. You know, it's kind of like organized religions. It's like maybe you could independently believe in some kind of God force or whatever if you want. And I wouldn't say that's dumb per se. But these very specific things are like, here's this guy that was sent down to Earth, and he specifically chose these kings and sultans to be your rulers or the sun god. Or da da. That is political and obvious and historically just trash. And you can tell that it's made up. But they have crushed the topic of conspiracy and religion alone. If you don't believe in the conspiracy, look at these people falling down on the floor and someone touches them with their jacket. You know, that jacket compels you. And oh, it works. I mean, it's easy to lie to people, and all governments do it. They've all done it. Whether it's Germany, the US, the UK, they always do it. And they do get busted on it, and people do come out with the information, but it doesn't matter because there's a swath of the population that if it's not on TV, and it's not from an authoritarian source, they do not have the capacity for critical thinking. They cannot look at physical evidence and put two and two together. They just believe what they're told, flat out. Mm. And a lot of people are not political either. You have to realize that most people do not care. And they can't. I mean, they're working so hard, check to check, in this debt system, just to pay for their house or the new mortgage, the college loan, that they don't have the time or the willpower to deal with it. And so they watch the news on TV and they think maybe something like that happened. And of course, what I call the ABC and NBC, CBS, Fox networks, and you can throw in Sky and BBC and the rest of it. It's trash. I mean, look at all this reporting about Syria and Libya. That's recent, you know, fake pictures from Iraq that they're using and saying were bodies from Syria.
Hold on a second. In fact, I was telling that to my mate yesterday that I've been watching a little bit of Al Jazeera lately every now and again in the mornings before the show. And every single, and I'm not kidding here, every single time that I've turned on Al Jazeera, they have this news story that says the war inside Syria. And every single time they do a report on the war inside Syria, showing victims, showing battle damage, showing anything like that, it is always shaky, low quality, and admittedly unsubstantiated footage from quote-unquote activists, which just screams to me like, excuse me, some intelligence op, some scumbag is trying to manipulate people. I don't even know what the heck is actually really going on in Syria, because there's no credibility left in the mainstream media. And I think that this is part of the whole truth movement problem as well, is that we, and in a lot of ways, we all want to go back to being able to trust what people say and things like that in an honest society type thing. But the fact of the matter is, you can't trust anything anymore. You have to do it for yourself, you know. Like, you can't expect other people's interpretations to be fact. You have to, in fact, verify from at least three independent sources before a story can be run with in the media. Well,
always follow the money. Always follow the money. Al Jazeera's run out of Qatar. Qatar and Saudi Arabia have been aiding the Syrian rebels. It is not a civil war. These are mercenary groups. This is a plan that's gone back. I mean, Wesley Clark talked about it. Here's our invasion plans. It got bumped up. I mean, it was the same as Libya. Al Jazeera was reporting stories like, look at this rally in Tripoli. And it was a rally, an older rally from India. And people had flags, the Indian flag up there. They're like, well, they both have green in them. That's close enough, you know. And trying to say that it was in Libya. And it got busted on that. Cold turkey, bam, he got busted. It doesn't matter. Just move along. Next lie. Move along. Tell the next lie. I mean, with Syria, there are some in the truth movement that are just vaguely saying, oh, it's CIA, MI6, Mossad, which really explains nothing at all. Doesn't tell you why. Doesn't tell you who. I mean, yeah, CIA is involved, but that doesn't help you. You got to know why. What is in our interest for Syria? All right, why does Turkey and Israel and the United States have such beef with Syria and the UK? Well, probably because in 2011 they made a $10 billion deal for a pipeline to Iran, which breaks the monopoly of the Baku pipeline, the BTC line coming from Azerbaijan through Turkey. That's the Caspian Basin. And they sell all that gas and oil through Europe, and they slide it through a pipeline in Israel and send it to Asia. Well, if you have a direct line to the Mediterranean through Syria, the monopoly is gone. Moreover, it puts Iran on a path of self-sufficiency because they'll be able to sell their natural gas. And it goes through Iraq. Now, the reason it waited till 2011, because that is when Iraq kicked our troops out of Iraq, kicked the Americans out. And as soon as that was done, I mean, before it was even done, like in July, they had already signed the deal for this pipeline. There's a $10 billion reason for it right there. That's why the Turks are pissed off.
Well, as largest as consortium the Rock, holder. Oh, as the Rockefellers said, bro, competition is a sin.
Yeah, exactly. The largest consortium holder in the gas fields in Azerbaijan for the BTC line is, of course, British Petroleum, BP. They have 50%, right? There's a reason for them. They're the new East India Tea Company. They're the new mega corporation from the UK. I mean, the UK doesn't run itself. There's their reasons. And, of course, the Russians are siding with the Syrians, but they're doing the right thing for the wrong reason, because their interest is their last naval base in the Mediterranean is in Syria. It's the only one. If you bump that out, if that were out, if you had regime change and you got rid of the base, then NATO would have a complete monopoly over the Mediterranean. They'd have hearsay over everything, and that would be bad news for the world. It's better to have them all fighting each other than for any either group to get a monopoly. And that's their motivation. And so you see clearly Qatar's channels and the U.S. channels are all going to be saying, blaming the government for the massacre. They said, but they did it with artillery, and yet the German newspapers go down there and see these people, and they have knife wounds, babies with their throats cut and stuff, which is gross and definitely a massacre, but that doesn't come from artillery. And they were killing the Alawites who are opposed to the Sunnis. So it was obviously the Sunni rebels who went in there and did it, and it was a psyops. They said, oh, it's the government. We need regime change. They're talking about air power going in right now. Joe Lieberman and these senators, these Zionists in the U.S. have been screaming that all along. But the rebels, again and again, are being caught with Turkish and Israeli weapons. The CIA is now openly financing them in this civil war, they like to say. But they want to get rid of the Baathists of Assad because they don't want that pipeline to go through. And they want to break Syria up. they want NATO to have a monopoly. This is a larger plan. It's the same thing in Libya. Is the moment after the revolution in Egypt with Mubarak out and they reopened the Suez to Libya where he could send his oil to China. That's what Gaddafi did. And he reneged on tens and billions worth in oil for the Europeans to go to China, which, of course, the U.S. didn't like that either because we're trying to keep China out of Africa. That's the situation in Sudan and in the Yemen Gulf and da-da-da-da.
And so, apparently they're using Libya for as a kind of like a military base camp for AFRICOM, so that because Libya had all these new airports built because basically they weren't in debt and they had their own oil company and they weren't enslaving all their people or anything like that, so they actually had money to spend on resources and stuff that would actually improve the country, unlike any of ours. But
which is what would happen again if they got the gas line, if they got self sufficiency, the line to Syria or the one through Pakistan. They would have self-sufficiency like Libya did and become a real threat economically where people might actually have freedom.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave. A tangled, tangled web indeed. It's just nothing happens by accident. Nothing happens by accident in global politics, you know? It's just anybody who...
You talk about Baluchistan and you talk about Jandala or the MEK and stuff, and people are like, what? They don't know where these places are, who these people are. But we're financing these terrorist groups to sabotage pipelines and things. But, of course, it's not terrorism when we do it. And my favorite one is in Yemen, where we're supporting an unelected dictator. I mean, he got elected, but he was the only name on the ballot. Same as Hadi. He's a former vice president. You know, Yemen had a civil war in the 90s, and then they had a secession movement in 2007. So, I mean, the whole sort of like the South and then another group in the West have been rebelling against their government for 100 billion different reasons. And, I mean, that's why they've had a civil war and a secession movement. But we erase all that history. We never mention the civil war or the secession movement. We just say this is the official line. We're supporting the government in Yemen because they're fighting Al Qaeda.
it's like cartoon like. It's like they're fighting Al Qaeda using Yemeni Sam or something like that. It's stupid.
We had to murder those kids with this drone because they're Al Qaeda, and we never give a name or mention. We're like, oh, they're militants after the fact. Who'd you kill? Oh, we killed them? Then they must have been Al-Qaeda. And we're like, really? Al-Qaeda's everywhere. Al-Qaeda's kidnapping people in France. Al-Qaeda's crossing the border in Egypt into Israel and shooting rockets at people. Al-Qaeda's in Yemen fighting the government. I mean, it's not Al-Qaeda. There is no Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, indeed. And also, there's Al-Qaeda's in Canada as well. So if you want to go shoot a moose or something like that, you won't be able to find them because there's too many Al-Qaeda's around there concealing them from you. We'll be right back after the break at TiffanyEastwoodShow.com, ladies and gentlemen. You can join us in the chat room if you like. And in the second hour, we'll be taking callers 218-339-8525 is the number to ring. We'll be right back.
Alone against your mad, deadly, worldwide conspiratorial gangster computer god communism with wall-to-wall deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly leak parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein controls, these hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges and the police trick, trap, rob, wreck, butcher, and murder the people that keep them terrorized in gangster Frankenstein earphone radio slavery for the communist gangster government and con artist parroting puppet gangster playboy scum on top.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
There is no
anybody
escape
else
from this worst
feeling as somewhat aggressive
deadly gangster Frankenstein controls.
I love the deadly gangster Frankenstein controls.
His rant wasn't even done yet. He was still going on.
Actually, I love that it did the gangster Frankenstein hangman controls because it's good, it's absolutely excellent to have them when you're playing Xbox. Now, Xbox, that's what we put Patriots in after we sacrificed them as patsies to set up our own people in order to, get pipeline deals and what have you. It's pretty straightforward, standard operating procedure.
Well, it's never admitted like that. They never say, hey, we're going to invade your land and have brutal exploitation of your land, labor, and resources. No. They always say, we're going to go spread democracy and have a humanitarian war and whatever. There's always a pretext for it.
Ryan, you know how we always try to debunk these people and things of that nature by using facts and then laughing at their stupidity and these pathetic cover stories that are put up to disguise their scumbaggery? I was just thinking about it, right? What if we were doing a show of some description or whatever, and we actually had people who were almost impersonators of these officials that are coming out, you know, like if we had the professional front drop with the President of the United States and we had somebody who looks like Barack Obama, and he just comes out and says everything that we know is really going on from an official point of view, like as if they were admitting everything.
I wonder what the psychological effect would be on the sheep then. I mean, to see, like, her leader admitting what they're doing, you know, just showing them like after, like right after a speech, and they go back and they're having dinner and they're like, oh, and they got their little kill list on the wall with X's on it, you know, like we got that one, that one.
Like Barack Obama probably carries a deck of cards in his pocket or something along that, along with all his voodoo charms.
Yeah, that guy, I mean, he really snowed a bunch of, I don't know what to call them, suckers, I guess. I mean, it happens all the time, you know. But Bush had basically worn out. He had no credibility with anybody with two brain cells rubbed together. And Obama comes out with the exact same policies. I mean, he'd always been pro-war. He had a Senate record, so you could have looked at it. You know, he'd always voted for sanctions. He'd voted for war. He voted the finance wars. He voted for torture, renditions, you name it. He's for it, Patriot Act, etc. But, and now he gives us NDAA, but he had a D next to his name, and he was on the other team. And so all these people were, like, crying. That's how, like, passionately they supported Barack Obama during his election, thinking he was going to be the anti-Bush, end all this wars, and give us ice cream in the mail or whatever. But, of course, you know, he tripled the size of the war in Afghanistan. The deal to get out of Iraq was made in the 11th hour of the Bush presidency. Anyway, Obama stayed there as long as he can, replaced him with mercenaries, put more troops in Kuwait and Qatar and Saudi Arabia instead, invaded Libya, going to invade Syria. And he's a war man, been bombing Pakistan, been bombing Yemen, been bombing Somalia. He's been spending trillions of dollars. He spent more in 8 months than Bush did in 8 years, which is amazing. That with the stimulus package and the bailouts and everything else. He's Mr. Goldman Sachs. And Mitt Romney's the same. Man, I got to restart my thing.
And this is the reason I think Barack Obama was to get so many women to vote for him as well, is because they were very impressed by the size of his austerity package.
Oh, my gosh. I got to restart my Skype real quick. I'll be back in a second. But, yeah.
But I'll just talk about Barack Obama's package by myself here. And I think that what we've got to realize about our politicians is that it's not an honest man's game, and it hasn't been not since the beginning of time. And basically, I think a lot of us suffer, or previously did suffer, and maybe have a bit of a residual sort of naivete about it. Like, as in, we want to believe, okay? We want to believe, but it's not actually real anymore, okay? Once you vote for Barack Obama and then you cross-reference what he said with what he did, nothing matches up at all, okay? I mean, I think the only thing he said that was honest was that he was running for president. Beyond that.
That's about right. But they fall for it. And there were some people who rationalized Bush the same way. I mean, Bush got up there and said, no nation building. He was against war. They always get elected on an anti-war ticket. And then they never do it, of course. But, I mean, Obama is a liar, obviously. And so is Bush. So is Cheney. So is Lieberman. All the rest of them. Joe Biden's just a drunk. I'm not sure if he's aware that he's vice president yet. That guy drinks more than Yeltsin. I got a great video of him singing, and Michelle Obama had to pull him off the stage. He got up there and tried to – he was so trashed. Joe Biden's the comic relief in the whole thing. But Barack Obama, he has a lot of followers still. They're like, oh, it's the Congress's fault. They won't let him do it. He's not even trying to do it. He's expanding all of these things. Do you know? They don't get it. They think no matter what, it's always the Republicans' fault or the Democrats' fault, and they couldn't possibly be working together. I mean, it's trillions of dollars divvied out to Lockheed and all these different weapons companies, and then the debt off of that for all these banksters. But they can't see that. It's like a sports team or something. They just cheer for their side no matter what.
See, and it doesn't matter whether or not the Longhorns are your favorite team or whether or not they're charging you. And that's the interesting thing. Often people will vote for their own destroyer, thinking that they're the savior. And I think right. that this actually speaks of the concept of the savior as being one of the biggest lies ever told. And it doesn't matter whether that's in movies or throughout history or something like that. Everybody's sitting around thinking somebody's going to save them. But the fact of the matter is, you've got the ability to save yourself. So stop sitting around waiting.
You don't need government to save you from government. I mean, government is the problem. The smaller, yeah. the better. I mean, but they keep voting for them over and over.
It's like AIDS to save you from cancer.
Yeah, there you go. Like, got ants, get roaches or
whatever. Yeah.
Or vice versa. I mean, if you have roaches, ants will get rid of them, but then you have ants.
You know, swallow the spider to catch the fly in your soup, you know.
Right, exactly. Until you eat a horse.
Yeah, swallow a chicken to get that spider, you know. You know, a chicken would be very nervous going down your throat, I think.
Well, that old lady could do it. But, I mean, they swallow it. They swallow it. Barack Obama, I mean, Bush or Obama or like Netanyahu could get on stage and eat a baby, and they would still be like, we are Israel's friend to the end. We will defend them. It doesn't matter what they do. You want to use depleted uranium and poison unborn children and murder people openly, shooting Occupy Gaza. I mean, Gaza is an outdoor prison. They're occupying the West Bank. It can't get any more South African apartheid, like Nazi-esque, than this. And that doesn't matter. If it's a dictator in Bahrain, they're on our side. You know, with the former dictator of Egypt, he's on our side. Dictators in Uzbekistan, they're on our side. Yemen, they're on our side. All those dictatorships, all that murder, theft, rape, everything evil, that's okay, because they're on our team. It's only bad when a place like Iran, which is not ethnically cleansing people, which is not in the middle of a civil war, which is not any of these things, they might get nuclear power for electricity. Oh, no. That's the biggest threat to the world.
one of my listeners the other day, Ryan, she said to me that Muslims want to kill all Christians. And I said to her, look, call up Kevin Barrett from Truth Jihad Radio, okay? He's a Muslim. He's a patriot. He's running for Congress in Wisconsin, all that kind of stuff. He's exposed 9/11 as an inside job. He's doing all this, that, and the other. Why don't you call him up on his show live and ask him why does he and everybody else who follows a similar religion to him want to kill all Christians?
You want to kill all of them? The funny thing is you're assuming what someone's thinking, whereas the Christian, Jewish, and Zionists actively are killing Muslims. They are Palestine off the map. You know,
that was the point that I made. It's like, well, even if the Muslims were trying to kill all the Christians, look at how many of the Muslim nations have been invaded by Christians just in the last decade alone.
Yeah, and I mean, they'll do it to other Christian nations. I mean, it's not like we've had the greatest relationship with Central America, you know.
how many Christian nations have been invaded by Muslim nations in the past decade, decades, even 100 years?
Exactly. Our government, the U.S. government, will invade Christian nations as well. They just say it's part of the drug war or whatever. But they'll go into Panama, which we've been in twice. They'll go into Honduras. They'll go into Nicaragua. We invaded Grenada. Grenada, instead of as a threat to the United States, communist takeover, whatever.
You know, because you know why I think they thought it was a threat? Because it sounded like the word grenade. Oh my God, they must be harboring weapons of mass lobability and destruction.
Yeah, it's got grenade in the name. There you go. That's the reason. It's just like they're throwing a dart.
Totally.
Here you go. This is doable. Let's do a practice run here, and then we'll go into Panama. You know,
we're going to pull the pin on Grenada.
Oh, jeez. But it's sad, and we went into Lebanon. Between the U.S. and the U.K., we have invaded every single nation other than Greenland and, like, I think Liberia and one other or whatever. We've been at war with everyone else. It's amazing.
Yeah. But it's obviously the Muslims that are all to blame for this. Now, my very special guest is Ryan Dawson.
They have weird-looking hats. It's got to be them.
Mate, the people with the bad hats.
They dress weird. It has to be them.
See, you know, and you can see them. You can see them, so they're obviously the enemy because, you know, your enemy is always right out in front of you where you can see them because they don't do any deception or anything like that because there's no deception involved in war, you know what I'm saying?
So, ladies,
come on, ladies and gentlemen, call on in. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. You want to get on with Ryan and myself. You can also join us in the chat room at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. And also, if you want to join in a conversation after the show, get in the chat room there as well for your Skype call.
Let's do get into Israel.
Is not what your enemies plan to do to you. If you wish to win, you had best fight as hard as you can to have any kind of chance. And everybody is a soldier in their own right who has their own particular skill sets with which to fight this great information war. And, of course, the medics that are the ones who patch us up after we get injured in battle and psychologically damaged by these things that we see in the course of our everyday business and jobs and what have you, is comedy. You've got to have a few laughs, mate. Otherwise, you'll go friggin' nuts. This show really is the lighter side of genocide. The call-in number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. And we are going to go to our first caller now, Dodge from Tampa. You are on the air, man.
Are you, can you hear me?
Yep.
Hello?
Yep. What's on your mind today, man?
Well, I mean, he was saying it's the government, but is it the government? Or is the government the glove? Who has the hand in the glove? I mean, these people are not Irish. You know, this is Bernanke. Kettner. Israel. AIPAC. Right. For thousands of years, these people have done this. They game every system. Who started Las Vegas, the gaming capital of the world? Bugsy Siegel. Okay?
Yep.
This is the problem, and people, you know, I love to say the J word, and I won't say it. You figure it out. They're not Italian, okay? The Italians are run by these people, and these people game every system, and we have to wake up to that and accept that and admit it in spite of being called an anti-this and anti-that. Otherwise, you're never going to get anything done. It ain't the government. The government's fine. Have you read the Constitution? It's a great document. If we went by that, it'd be fine, but they game it. They game everything. They cheat. They lie. They steal. They murder. They kill.
Oh, bro, yeah, I'm not anti-Semitic or anything like that. I had the ADL write a hit piece about me and my film on 9/11 because I went all into the Israeli role. I mean, my God, they got caught with a truck full of bombs on the George Washington Bridge. They have people with fake passes working for Denko Mechanical, which didn't even exist. You have Khali Godala and Sakir Hamad and that crew. Then you had Paul and Sylvan Kritzberg, Yaron Schmel, Omar Mamari, and Oded Elner filming the first plane hitting, working for Urban Moving Systems, a front for the Mossad, flicking lighters and celebrating the attack. I mean, there's clear Zionist hand in the glove there.
But don't forget Lucky Larry.
Oh, well, yeah, Larry Silverstein and shoot, Lowry, and you can go on a big list, Chertoff, all the rest of them. And then
it looks like a bar mitzvah or a wedding, a Jewish wedding.
Well, there was also some kind of Israeli shipping company that had an office in the World Trade Center that moved out a week before the attacks and broke their lease.
Broke a massive
lease. They're so lucky. Shipping. How did they know?
Virginia.
I mean, we got to wake up this fact.
Didn't they?
They did. Zim Shipping moved out, and of course the movers moved in. But I mean, there's so many 9/11 films that just dodge Israel completely, and you have to look at the whole package. The anthrax thing later that said death to America and death to Israel. The Israelis saying they witnessed the transfer of anthrax between Mohammed Atta in a meeting in Prague, which of course didn't exist. Declassified documents just 2 days ago admitting Cheney and Co. knew that was bull. It wasn't a mistake. It was a conscious lie. But he gets on with Tim Russert and the rest of them on the Alphabet Soup Networks and says, This meeting in Prague, connecting Iraq to Al-Qaeda and thus 9/11. And there's still like 30-some percent of Americans that think Saddam Hussein has some role with either Al-Qaeda and direct role in 9/11. Complete lies.
Because who controls the media?
Well, yeah, I mean, who runs the media? I mean, look at the media. The media has overlapping board of directors with the Pentagon. Completely.
Yeah, and it's the same. And every movie or TV show starts out now with either masturbation or some kind of kiddie porn or some kind of disgusting degradation. Every movie. Tell me the last good movie you've seen.
Well, I live in Japan, so I'm not watching stuff, I guess.
You haven't seen any. They don't make good movies anymore.
I've turned it off, so I don't know.
Yeah. I'm with you.
I watched The Avengers last night, if that helps you.
That's pretty old, isn't it?
The Avengers?
That's a 60s.
The new movie,
that's a 60s
it's
in the
cinemas. It's not that old.
The Avengers is a 60s TV series, correct?
No. The Avengers is a Marvel comic superheroes with Iron Man and the Hulk and all these other comic book characters and things like that. Not the old Avengers.
No, and even the comic book characters are going gay because that's so in style now. And I got nothing against gays, but I don't tell everybody my sex life. Quit telling me yours.
They've always had gay characters, just Huffington Post and stuff had nothing to write about that day, so they figured to say, hey, look, there's a gay member at Alpha Flight, but that dude has been around, he's not like a core character or anything either, but that's been around since the 90s at least, or the X-Men comics and stuff, but I mean, it's just something to flog after the thing in North Carolina where they said they voted in the referendum saying we're not going to have gay marriage. It's like, I am so.
How is that my business?
All that, like, who cares? You know, the government should have nothing to do with marriage, gay or straight. Like,
exactly.
I do not care.
It's none of my business what you do. Do whatever you want to do. Leave me alone.
Exactly. Like, I don't care. Yeah. I don't care about any kind of marriage. Like, the whole concept's kind of weird. Look, I have a ring. You know, like, if you love each other and live together, you're doing it anyway.
What is it? I have a ring around my finger, which is an ancient sign of possession that I own that person who's wearing that ring that I gave them. Oh, maybe that makes me feel like I'm in love.
Any ring, you're worshiping Saturn, which is Satan, blah, blah, blah. This is synagogue of Satan. I think that you can find that in some ancient text somewhere.
Yeah, but all the meaning's all been lost. You know, when people sing happy birthday, they're not really worshiping the moon god. But, I mean, they don't know the origins. They're not really into it. But, I mean, I think it's disgusting that De Beers can come out and say, if you love her, show her you love her, send my company loads of money for this shiny rock.
Yeah. If you don't give her diamonds, you're a deadbeat mofo, and she won't actually give you any.
If you really love them, you'll pay us $8,000 to put their body in a box and give a speech to somebody I never met.
If you want to buy some clear and shine, buy a bottle of vodka.
Then you're going to give up and work for some scumbag corporation for about 12 years to pay it off.
Yes. Well, by the way, just so you know, I don't just talk it, I walk it. I haven't paid my mortgage for 5 years and 6 months or my taxes. So.
I haven't paid my taxes in the U.S. in a couple years and not going to either. I'm so far down on the list, they're not going to bother me.
Arigato.
Actually, I did walk more than that. I walked right on across the ocean, so I don't have to pay any taxes to the U.S. anymore.
Speak the sun is rising.
And it's and the mountaintop is tax-free.
I love what Russell
means. It's a pleasure, you guys. Native
American Lakota, he said, my grandfather took me to this hilltop, and he kind of took his hand from left to right across the horizon, and he said, all of this, son, someday will not be yours.
Oh, that's awesome and really depressing.
Yeah, it's you got to find humor in the darkest places. I mean, Russell Means is the one that said that, you know, that, like quoting him.
Well, there's a good Oscar Wilde one. He says, we all live in the gutter, but some of us are still looking at the stars.
Yeah. You got to... I need humor to get through it because, I mean, there is nothing funny about drones murdering kids or, you know, austerity, basically intentional poverty to the point of starvation in Africa and Central America. And now it's coming to Europe and people are becoming homeless. And just it's so dark and so wicked and evil. But I've got to find a way to a psychological defense. I got to find some humor. And it's not that I find those acts funny. I just try and find ways around it like we've been doing on the show. I am torn up about all of this. It's why I make all these feature films and things. But I got to find a way to laugh at these neocons and all the suckers that fall for it. It's just unreal.
Well, it's a health thing, I think, is that you've got endorphins and various other things. Basically, the process of laughter is not entirely dissimilar from the health benefits of extra breathing and things of that nature that you get from regular orgasms and such. So I think that basically, if you want to live a long, happy, healthy life, stop worrying about everything that's dangerous and scary or whatever and find out something that's funny about it, but be aware of it and do something about it. About it so that you're actually at the same time that you're being effective and making a difference, you're also having fun. And a lot of truthers forget that being a truther actually is not entirely dissimilar from any other kind of employment, except in the other forms of employment, somebody else is employing you. You and now you're employing you. And also in a normal job, you get the weekends off, you get a couple of weeks vacation a year. And as a truther, you actually have to figure out when you need that weekend, those weekends off, and to take those days off, to turn the Skype off, turn the Facebook off, don't watch any documentaries or anything like that. Just turn it off for a bit and just relax, right? And in a way, I think basically we're living in such a crappy system that if we don't actively seek out as many coping mechanisms as we possibly can, whether that be through other people or through simply figuring out what the heck is going on and knowing how valuable I am and happy and what have you, we're never really going to get anywhere unless we are able to take care of ourselves and our own minds and bodies at the end of the day.
And when you laugh at them, it freaks them out. They don't know how to take it. If they want to take it seriously, and if you don't, that's the best defense against them.
And you'll
thou
have a
shalt
lot of
not take thyself or life too freaking seriously.
You get those crabs in a bucket type of thing too, or I guess in New Zealand you'd say tall poppy syndrome or something, but the crabs in the bucket, because when you're happy, when you're a leader, there's so many people that want to pull you down. Because misery loves mm-hmm. company. They cannot stand it that you are not as broken as them. There's a group out there just like, oh, the NWO Illuminati Freemason, da da da, gloom and doom. They control everything in the world and you can't do shit about it. Da, 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 and just, you know, give me money. Don't.
Yes. Always give me money. Always. That's what I always learned about God. He's all knowing, all being, but he's always out of money. What's wrong with that guy?
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to subscribe to the Vinny Eastwood Show for $5 a month at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com.
Why are you talking about Zion? This is the Bavarian death cult of angels.
Vinny's a god.
I mean, seriously, I'm like a. I'll turn this into a car auto show or something like that, and I'll talk about the Bavarian Maserati or something.
You guys are great. Keep it up.
Just ignore the people.
I'm going to go drink.
Just ignore that.
Oh, we're having fun. All right, Dodge from Tampa, if you have any anything else you'd like to say or whatever, but I've been really enjoying the conversation, man. Thanks for calling in.
Dodge, watch War by Deception, warbydeception.com. I think you'll dig it.
Yeah, yeah. War by Deception. That's it's and that's another thing. That's actually did you get that from Sun Tzu, mate?
Yeah, that's a quote from Sun Tzu, but it was also from a Mossad agent, Victor Ossofsky. He wrote All Wars by Deception. He was in a telling book about, he's a former Mossad agent, and he was talking about the bombing in Beirut on the barracks, and he was giving all these false flags, recent false flags. But before that, of course, was Sun Tzu.
I mean, he probably stole it from Sun Tzu as well. I mean, have you noticed that there's really nothing new under the sun?
Yeah, well, I mean, Sun Tzu was talking about in war, try to deceive your enemy into thinking you have smaller forces than you have and stuff. Victor was saying, bomb someone and blame it on someone else. So, it wasn't, you know, like, he meant on, like, a totally different thing. But deception is deception. But Sun Tzu didn't take it as far as false flags, but he did say all manner of things. But he's talking about armies with bow and arrow type of stuff, so I made it a little bit harder.
Well, he was talking about basically being a responsible general and trying to keep your men alive, whereas I think that there's a certain amount of psychopathy that's now running through the major intelligence agencies who are provoking all these incidents and things of that nature, and they care not whether or not their men survive.
It gets worse and worse because they're not at risk. They put other people at risk, so you don't have to bring up arms yourself like back in the day. And the more and more technological we get, the larger the distance. I mean, now that you can have drones go kill people, you don't even have that scenario like in the War of 1812 where the army just said, no, we're not going into Canada. Why am I going to do that? You know, I want to risk my life fighting for that. The troops can refuse, but a drone cannot. So once you have robots out there murdering people, it's on. They'll bring them to the U.S. They'll bring them everywhere because they will not disobey, and they don't need you anymore.
Yeah, and those drones are going to be piloted by people that are in another country. I mean, are we going to actually wind up having artificially intelligent drones who just walk around on themselves, completely automated, no pilot, back in some office in Las Vegas, eating ho-hos and ding-dongs and drinking like 40-ounce coffees that he got from a truck stop in Tennessee or something like that, you know? That kind of stuff. When you're far removed from the consequences of your actions really don't have any consequences for you, do they? But they do have consequences for other people. And I think that's what's happened to so many of us with this new digital age and this difference and distance that we have between us on so many intellectual and emotional and propagandistic levels, is that the separation, I think it's like separation anxiety sort of thing. Like, I'm anxious that people are going to become so separate from the consequences of their actions that they'll really start to believe that their actions have no consequences and lead us into a new dark age of terror and fear that we'd never even conceive of.
It's like as if you worked at Goldman Sachs or something. You're like, this doesn't matter, these little peons. I'll just all these speculators betting money, you know, this whole mortgage-backed security fraud stuff they did with the credit ratings, you know, paying them for false ratings, etc. And they're like, it doesn't matter, the government will bail us out.
Yeah, see, and again, I think that some of these institutions need to be lobbied in order to get rid of some of their partners. Like, I think we should lobby the Federal Reserve to cut off Goldman Sachs. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, 218-339-8525, if you want to talk about Goldman Sachs.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seemed. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
for the Vinny A. Sports Show. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. That's Bill Hicks. And I think when I think back on it, before I got arrested, which kind of really kind of shook me out of my, I actually kind of trust the government and I kind of wanted to go and vote and sort of be a mainstream filmmaker or whatever. All those dreams just kind of disappear when you get arrested, and you're never going to be the same person because your perspective changes, right? And during the time leading up to that real traumatic instance in my life, I was listening to a lot of Bill Hicks. And that was something that really, I think it almost prepared me for what I've become now. And that's what life really is, I think, the good and the bad experiences and all the people that you meet, all the conversations you have and everything like that. It's like every day you get a new piece of Lego and you're building yourself a nice big Millennium Falcon out of it or something like that, you know? And I'm certainly going through frickin' hyperdrive at warp factor 4 with parsecs and what have you. So,
it's like you were talking about humor earlier. You know, comedians, some of them, can have a very large impact on politics. You look at George Carlin, Joe Rogan, to some extent, Jon Stewart. With Borders, at least, they have a large impact on political thinking. You know, poking fun at this is a way to really pop the bubble, actually, when you see how obvious it is for someone else to look at it and go, oh yeah, humanitarian war. I mean, it's an oxymoron in the title, but some others are always going to fall for it. I mean, our Congress has an approval rating in the single digits or something, and you can see how much people are voting against someone rather than for someone. Most of it's rigged, but the 98% incumbent rate of return. The incumbents are getting voted back in, but their approval rating is like 8 or 9% or something, or it might be in the low teens or whatever. And yeah, they're all getting reelected anyway. It's definitely something fishy there. Definitely something fishy there. Ron Paul gets all these people at the rallies and then he gets in the 8% or something like that. Mitt Romney can't even fill up a high school gym and he's winning these things anyway. Yeah, but he can't get the delegates because it's hard to fake an actual person. So what they do is they just say, oh, well, we're going to go by the popular vote. All these delegates you have, you're not allowed to vote for the person you want. You're going to have to vote for Romney in the first round regardless. Can't vote your conscience because he won the popular vote, according to Diebold.
And we all know how reliable those Diebold voting machines are, especially with the congressional inquiries of hackers and stuff like that, who said, yes, I could program a virus, yes, it would be undetectable, and yes, it would split the vote 49-51 in favor of whoever
all
the heck
this
we wanted.
Been out there too.
That's mainstream news.
In 2000, and I do not like Al Gore any more than Bush, but I'm just saying.
Gorski.
Gore, he's one of those... He's one of those green, I don't know what you call him. He's just a lion SOB is what he is. But, I mean, one of those granola types that were like, we'd be recycling toilet paper for up to him. He's lying about everything. But whatever. I mean, that the stuff out there about hacking, about Diebold, there have been all these films out there exposing it, showing it right in front of you. Watch this. Here's your vote. Here's the result. It's been out there since 2000. And... yet, we're still using these machines, and even then, you know, they count the votes. They've done every manner of trickery and theft. Romney's out there with his mafia, and they are organized crime. They're going out there, turning the lights off, pushing over old people, having police lock the buildings, having an oral vote, and everyone says yes, and they go, okay, so no, you know, just every manner of fraud possible. Cheated in Maine. He did in Iowa, got it reversed. It's just, if you can't have fair elections, you don't really have a democracy. And again, even if you do have a democracy, that doesn't mean automatically that it's good or that you're free. Yeah, it's always corporate fascism.
If anything, if you have a look at all the democracies in the world, if you have a democracy, it's almost guaranteed that you're not free. Let's go to our caller there, Lisa from East Texas. Thanks for calling in. Love, how are you today?
Hey, Benny, great. How are you? Hey, Brian.
The response is somewhat fabulous.
Good, good. It's a nice hot day here in Texas. Hey, Brian.
Yes.
Beyond, because I just went to your website today. I've clicked a link on a comment thread, and I'm looking forward to watching the video. So thanks for doing good work.
If you want to watch Just 9/11, just watch a movie I made called 9/11 and the Cover-Up. If you want to see the whole picture, it's kind of a beast of a film, War by Deception, and that gets into the Iraq War and some of the prior stuff from Oklahoma City and Iran-Contra, kind of brushes through. That'll give you the whole picture, but that's a beast of a film. People usually watch it 3 or 4 times because I say so many names and things, but that's how I roll the facts.
That's the thing. That's how you both learn and brainwash people. There's 3 rules to it, okay? Repetition, repetition, repetition.
That's right. That's right. They do it to us all the time. So we can do it back, right?
That's how you get the catchphrases on the press. Too big to fail, too big to fail, too big to fail. Just keep saying it until it's true. Well, I'm not saying the same thing over and over.
I'm 6 foot
just giving
four, man. I'm 6 foot four, bro. I'm definitely too big to fail.
Too big to jail.
Too big to jail. No, that's seriously, actually, because what was it? If they were going to put me in like solitary confinement or something like that, like, I have a very loud voice. I can sing and stuff like that. So I'd be in there like for 8 hours a day or something, singing show tunes or whatever. It's an inside job. Just cracking up everybody and getting I'll get all the other prisoners that are in their thing. It'll be like one of those old school movies with all the black slaves and stuff like that, wearing the black and white stripy jumpsuits and some old school 1930s prohibition era jail thing, all singing together while it'd be great.
You got it all planned out.
Straight up.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to ask you a question, Ryan. When you bring up when you bring up the, I'm aware of the Israeli Mossad, you know, possible and probable involvement in 9/11 and so forth, and the whole Zionist agenda here in our country with AIPAC and so forth. Do you often find that are you often accused of being an anti-Semite and a Nazi?
Less than you would think. I got much more flack over a film I made called More Than Taboo, which challenged the 6 million figure. But really, the run-of-the-mill person, I don't ever really get accused of that. The ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, wrote a piece about me. It was in the Jerusalem Post, and it was also in Haaretz. Haaretz retracted it. Jerusalem Post did not. But, of course, they're run by Hollinger, Richie Perle, and Henry Kissinger, who I made fun of in the film. But they tried to smear it as that, and they grouped it together with some other film that was made by some neo-Nazi or whatever, and tried to like guilt by association. But I do not mention the Jews or anything like that once ever in my film. It's not like that. I mean, Zionism is a political ideology, right? Not an ethnicity, not a religion. I'm very clear about it, and I explained it. You know, the architects for the Iraq War, Israel as a nation had very vested interest on why they wanted to get rid of Saddam and so on. And so I was saying the reason there's a disproportionate number of people of a certain ethnicity doing criminal acts in the United States is because they have state sponsorship. They are getting money. I mean, AIPAC openly lobbies our Congress and spies on them, and they can get away with it because they're running massive blackmail rings, and I went over that with Charles Kushner and that whole scandal with MEGA and the blackmailing of Governor McGreevy, and they have a list. The FBI sits on it. Sybil Edmonds hinted at this. If you've got her book, Sybil Edmonds, the ex-FBI translator, she wrote a book called Classified Woman, and they blackmail people. They blackmail their own people, and the Mossad does that. The CIA does that. They all do that. But, I mean, it's like – you cannot throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of thing. And so because I'm clear in that in my film, I don't sit there and be like, the Jewish guy, Paul Wiffowitz, the Jewish guy. Like, I don't emphasize it because it doesn't matter. You know, it's like, yeah, obviously he's going to be dying. He's a Jewish supremacist, and it fits in. I mean, religion is used to pit people against each other, you know?
Dig this. You know how there's these great quotes out there from these hardcore, insane, like psychopathic rabbis or something like that who say everybody else is a cockroach scum and they should serve us as our slaves or whatever. And then people use that one quote from that one rabbi to say that all Jews think that, and all Jews go to that same synagogue that one rabbi is at and listen to that only rabbi.
Listen to Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson or some of the things that come out of their mouths, these so-called
John
Christian preachers, you know? Hagee, Mr. Crack Whore, you know, he's got, the guy is seeing a male prostitute and doing crystal meth together. And, you know, he just goes back to his flock and be like, forgive me. And they did. You know, that was George Bush's spiritual advisor, George Bush, who also had male prostitutes in the White House like Jeff Gannon, who, by the way, made references to internal government memos about the Valerie Plame affair before it was public knowledge. So where, how did he get his hands on that? That's the scandal with the ousting the CIA agent in charge of the ring for Brewster Jennings and Associates who followed nuclear proliferation. You know, and they had to lie about it because we're the ones selling the secrets on the black market through Mark Grossman, et cetera. I mean, it could go on and on, but go ahead.
I was under the impression that Obama was the male prostitute in the White House.
Yeah, he's a prostitute is what he is, Mr. Hollywood, Mr. Movie Star.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, but they have a lot of hookers. Deborah Jean Palfrey was murdered over that, you know, a lot more than just bitter.
The DC madam.
Yeah, the DC madam. Yeah. I mean,
I will not commit suicide. I will not commit suicide. There's no way. I'm preparing. I'm in for the long haul.
But if I do, I'm going to go and do it at my mom's house. You know, yeah. Oh, so terrible. But, I mean, they had to kill her. I mean, she should have just went public with her information on the web and the hell
seriously,
with court.
This is the thing. If you've got damaging information, if you keep it to yourself and it's not out there, then you're a target. If it's already out there, then it's already too late. And there's no point killing you if it'll only make things worse for the establishment. Okay? So if you've got secret information or anything like that and you're planning to release it, don't tell people you're going to release it. Just release it.
Exactly.
Well, you're dead.
That's why my film came out of nowhere. I didn't say anything. I didn't make a trailer. I didn't do anything. I just put it up free. It got taken down from YouTube. Actually, my whole account got erased. Hundreds and hundreds of videos got removed.
That sucks.
Yeah, it was bad. I'm like, oh my goodness. All that stuff I had is gone. Now, some of them had been copied. This is where the plagiarists actually helped me, the people I hate so much. Because of all the movies they had copied, I got to copy copies of my movies and got some of it back. So that's like, made me rethink it all. But I mean, I'm all for sharing and everything, but I mean, like, gosh, if people had even paid a dollar for Word by Deception, I would have made hundreds of thousands of dollars and I'd be set right now and could do this full time, but that's not how it works.
Yeah, and that's another thing about the truth movement, man. It is really, really a tough job and often a very low-paying job and often doing it full-time. You have to be in a very, like, almost in a freak of a position, you know? Like, most truthers I know have day jobs because it's not possible to derive enough income to even come close to survival being a truther. And that's the way that sucks about the entire industry, because you have a look at any industry, you have a look at oil, media, blah, 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 blah. It's all about doing the wrong thing in order to get paid. And so when you do the right thing, it's unsurprising that you don't get paid for doing it.
Yeah, you know, most of the worthwhile things that have been done in this world and in life are very financially unproductive. You know, that's just, I think, how it goes. And maybe there's something, I mean, it's great to make a living, but maybe there's something uncorrupting about that unfortunate principle of not making money for doing good things. You know what I'm saying? Money can be a corrupting influence at some point, we all know, Wall Street. But you know what I'm saying? It just seems like the people that do the most good for the world are least recompense for it, and that's just, I think, the way of the world.
Yeah. I mean, you got it. There's a line between greed and, you know, the way, and I'm just being pragmatic and realistic here. I mean, the system we're in, we're stuck in right now, like, you do have to use some medium, some physical medium like money to get your foods and things, unless you can get the land and start a farm and don't. I mean, think of, like, I'm in Japan, I got a 3-year-old to take care of and a wife, and, you know, I have a job. But I like my job. The job I'm doing, I don't feel is like contributing to the evil or what have you. I mean, I'm an educator and I teach economics and I teach at a high school. And I'm telling them how it is. I mean, they're getting to hear it straight up. So it's good. I'm unbrainwashing people. So now not everyone in the school system is doing that, but you got to start somewhere. So I've always said, since I was a child, I'm going to go in from within and change it from within. And I've stuck to it.
Hold on a second. Do you know what the definition of somebody who goes within and is not detected and changes things from within? An infiltrator. And that's the thing that I think that the truth movement has actually become adept at all over the world, don't you think, is that we are the perfect infiltrators who are sitting in there and we are weaving our little schemes and we're converting minds and we're turning them people against the enemy and stuff like that. We're using the tactics of the enemy to destroy them without doing anything wrong.
The anti-fat
movement. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back
after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, 218-339-8525. This is the Goldman Sachs elevator music.
And everybody talks like this at the Federal Reserve.
I love scumbaggery.
They're more like the folks from Reservoir Dogs.
Mr. Blonde. Like Reservoir Knobs, because they're just a bunch of... All right, anyway.
They're dumb. East Texas, they're so stupid. Oh, go
Lisa
ahead.
Lisa in East Texas is still on the line.
Yeah.
You must have had something important to say to keep hanging on. So.
I had one more thing, because Ryan mentioned how you either teach economics or you have a degree in economics, is that right?
I have two jobs. I have degrees in history and philosophy, actually, but
okay.
I'm a self-taught kind of person, so I'm teaching the business stuff. And
well, I wondered if you had ever heard, and you too, Vinny, I think this he would be a very interesting guest on your show. His name is Anthony Michels. He's from the Netherlands. He has a really interesting concept on money. And he's on the internet. He has a website called realcurrencies.wordpress.com. And I've been going to his site and kind of trying to challenge my presuppositions on, you know, the philosophy and theories of money. I think he's got really interesting ideas. And so you might have him on sometime. He's a pretty smart guy, and he has some very provocative ideas about how we can become free from banking, basically, through grassroots, I don't know, to use a better word, communities creating their own methods of money and an exchange, not in purely a barter sense, but he's got some pretty mind-blowing information. It would be very, very interesting, I think, for both of you to check out.
Yeah, we should legalize competing currencies, for one.
Mm-hmm.
Legalize competing currencies, and you've got to get rid of central banking and usury. I mean, usury is theft, flat out.
That's
the point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Like multi-purpose commodities, I think are probably going to be the future currency. Like, I'd even toyed with the idea that marijuana could be an effective currency, because think about it. Weed will get you through times of no money better than money will get you through times of no weed.
Well, tobacco is a currency within jails and prison systems. You know, they use, even the ones that don't smoke, they use cigarettes as a form of currency. Like, anything can work if as long as it's accepted. The thing is,
something physical
is so much better than digitalizing money. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, when the collapse comes, you've got to make sure that you've got an enormous hoard of something that's valuable. The things that are most valuable that you'll be able to trade with almost anybody will be drugs like alcohol or illegal substances or tobacco and things of that nature. They'll be basically currency, okay, because everybody will want them, because everybody will be really, really ticked off at the fact that they're in recession and they can't afford anything and they want to have some way to escape. So that's basically your perfect currency right there. So
the other shoe hasn't even dropped.
Stockpile illegal drugs and other stimulants for the collapse.
Well, CIA is ahead of the curve then.
The CIA got it down, homie.
They are running the heroin out of Afghanistan. They've been running the cocaine. They've been running it out of Mexico and Colombia. Of course, Secret Service has been seeing hookers down there in Colombia. I mean, oh, they finally got caught once in one place. And that was a little news scandal. Like, little sex scandals and stuff can get in the news a little bit, as long as they don't have any big fish in them. But, you know, the flat-out murdering of thousands of people, that, whatever, you know. another 100 people died in Iraq, another 300 injured last week. Not in the news. The 100 killed in Syria was in the news because they were trying to blame that on the Assad and give a pretext for war. But in the same, almost the same day, actually, in Iraq, another 100 dead. Not a word said about it because it doesn't help the agenda.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you've got an agenda like that, basically, it doesn't matter what happens. You're always in between Iraq and a hard place.
Oh, man. And they had been starving them to death between the two Gulf Wars with the sanctions. And this is mainly children. You're talking about hundreds of thousands of people dying from just basic needs and just no clean water. They're getting dysentery and just very preventable things. Dying from dehydration, dying from starvation. Because of these sanctions, they act like sanctions are no big deal. Sanctions are an act of war, straight up. And they want to starve children to death for what? For what? Iraq wasn't attacking the United States.
It's pretty straightforward. It's pretty straightforward. If you wouldn't do it yourself, you should never, under any circumstances, send somebody else to do it in your stead or justify your government doing it. I mean, anybody who's listening in from America or whatever, think about this. Would you specifically go somewhere, kidnap a child, and just watch them starve to death? Okay? You wouldn't do that, would you? Yet it's okay if your government does it?
Exactly. And it happens over and over again. And, you know, it's like with North Korea. We'll put the sanctions on food and everything, but somehow we sell them heavy water reactors for nuclear fuel and nuclear energy and nuclear bombs. We'll sell them heavy fuel reactors. We'll sell them missiles. We'll allow the Chinese in to sell them deployment systems and things. We use the medium. We go through Pakistan or whatever. We know damn well where it's going, what's happening. But don't let them have bread. Got to punish the public, of course. It's unreal. It's so disgusting. And I have sympathy for these kids and things because North Korea is so demonized, and I have no love for the hair leader over there. But you got to think of the general public. And the sanctions aren't helping anybody. I mean, there's specific sanctions and specific things, and it's just designed to decimate a population. And all that does is make them cling to their leader even harder. When the government's rationing food, they can't really rise up with the pitchforks, can they? But that's the whole point. They want to keep them in power. I mean, that boogeyman is what makes South Korea and Japan have to stay in line. So they over and over again, I mean, Japanese people do not want these U.S. bases of peppering all over the country, nuclear submarines, etc. Imagine how bad that could have been if the tsunami had hit just, you know, a little lower or what have you. It could have been even worse. But, you know, they've got all these things here. Nobody wants them. Nobody wants them in Guam either. It's an unincorporated territory, a.k.a. a base. Basically, the island is a base. But every now and then, right before the contracts are to be signed for another 5 years or so, suddenly North Korea shoots a missile into the Sea of Japan or has an incident with South Korea that South Korea actually started. Whatever. There's always an incident just before those contracts go in Japan, and then they get them in another 5 years or so like we did last time, last December. It just happens over and over again. And, you know, Japan has to pay for 70% of the price. People are under the delusion that, oh, America pays for all the defense of Japan. No. America is defending Japan, but Japan has to pay for it, 70% of the bill.
Well, isn't that part of the World War II kind of treaties or surrender conditions that Japan can't have a standing military? They can't have a standing military. Like, they can't have their own soldiers and their own equipment or anything like that. But they can have foreign troops from America that they have to pay for and can't command.
Exactly. And that got amended in 1951 during the Korean War. They said, all right, Japan, you can. They made an amendment to Article 9. And everyone forgets that. So Japan has a big military or defense force, whatever you want to call it. I mean, they've got submarines and helicopters and everything. It's the military. But they still have the U.S. bases here. So Japan can more than take care of itself. It's not like if the U.S. left, Japan has no military and just be sitting here defenseless. Japan has the ninth – well, they have the most powerful non-nuclear military on Earth and the ninth strongest power, just even including people with the bomb, with ease. No one is going to invade Japan. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. There's nothing here. I mean, it's one of the hardest countries to invade.
Not now, anyway, since Fukushima.
We're radioactive. There's no oil. There's no coal. There's no natural gas.
Technically, they must be one of the most powerful nuclear deterrent.
Oh,
that's called a nuclear deterrent.
Yeah, that is. No one wants to go on the east side of Japan. But I mean, seriously, like, there's no natural resources here. People will fight basically until you wipe nearly all of them out, and it'd just be the dumbest place on earth to attack. You get nothing out of it. You would win nothing. It's just a beast of a navy to deal with, and they have nothing for you to steal of any worth. I mean, the biggest thing, Japan's biggest currency is their brains. I mean, they're good at inventing things and making stuff and selling it and making products. But as far as like raw goods, I mean, they're importing 99% of their coal. They're importing 90-something percent of their oil. They can't even use their nuclear power anymore because all but one of them has been shut off. So, you know, this stuff with North Korea is just nutty. But they got to keep them in power. Got to keep everyone in line. Divide and conquer.
We've come to the end of the show now, Ryan. And Lisa, I also want to really thank you for your call as well. So before we go, Ryan, I'd really love it if you'd plug your websites and your videos and things of that nature so people who have heard you perhaps for the first time on the show today can go and follow you up and see more of your great work.
Sure. Rise 2 cents, as R-Y, number 2 cents is in common sense. When I chose that name, I had no idea how big I was going to get, so I know it's a bad one. Rise 2 cents on YouTube. Just Google anti-neocon, and my site will be the first one to pop up. That's my forum. And then I have a special website called warbydeception.com, and it's got the main feature film there, and I have a Vimeo account, Rye Anti-Neocons. But all of this is Googleable. I love things that are Googleable. Just write Ryan Dawson 9/11, you'll find things. So those are my sites, the forum, and I'm always posting on whatreallyhappened.com as well, and sometimes I'm on the radio there as the host or as a guest. So you can find all my work there, and you can enjoy those films. Once you find one, they'll link to all the rest of them. So, yeah, subscribe to Rise 2 cents. Jump on the forum. I'll have a video of your show on there soon. I gotta go to work.
You gotta go to work, and I've gotta do all the editing and archiving and send you the links, and I've also gotta have a conversation after the show with all the listeners as well. So ladies and gentlemen, if you want to join in the after the show chat that we have after each episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show live, if you're listening in, go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com chat room and pop in your Skype name there, and we will bring you into a group call after the show each day so that you can hang out and talk to like-minded people from all around the world who just incidentally all listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, have a sense of humor, and know that being alone really sucks, and there's no point trying to make an effort to be even more alone, so you reach out. Thank you. And Ryan, thank you too. And we'll see you again, ladies and gentlemen.